Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Usually when we talk with Dr. Colby Jubenville of the Department of Health and Human Performance, we're talking about sports or sportsmanship. However, he is now the author of a book about how to survive in today's very precarious economic climate. It's called Zebras and Cheetahs, Look Different and Stay Agile to Survive the Business Jungle, co-authored with Coach Michael J. Burt, and we'll be back to find out how to succeed in business without really crying after these words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are some of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. Two MTSU Japanese language students have been honored by the Consul General of Japan in Nashville. Speeches presented by Cameron Mitchell and Trevor Sittler won special honors from Consulate General Motohiko Kato at the 6th Annual Tennessee Area Japanese Speech Contest held April 6th at Vanderbilt University. Mid-state consumers have become more optimistic about the economy. The Middle Tennessee Consumer Outlook Index from MTSU's Office of Consumer Research rose from 144 in February to 193 in April. And the MTSU Faculty Brass Quintet performed at the Salvation Army's second annual Spring Festival held April 13th at Northside Baptist Church in Murfreesboro. MTSU students teach children music at the Salvation Army's West Main Street location. For MTSU News at any time, go to MTSUnews.com.
Joining us on the telephone is Coach Michael J. Burt from here in Murfreesboro, and here in the studio, Dr. Colby Jubenville from the Department of Health and Human Performance. Colby, let me start with you. Why did you veer away from your usual academic discipline and decide to go in this direction?
Well, that's easy, and the real reason is the individual that's on the other line, Michael Burt. I heard Coach Burt speak in my class back in 2007, and when I heard him speak, I said to myself, he has what the world desperately needs, and he focused on four simple ideas. Those were voice, leadership, execution, and culture, and those four ideas drive what he does every day and ultimately brought us together to do a lot of great work together for companies in Middle Tennessee and around the nation and put this book together.
Michael, can you expand on those four basic ideas that Colby just lined up?
Yeah, and really at that time, I didn't know I was speaking on those things. I had a message, and when I got done speaking in that class, I always enjoy speaking to college classes. Colby said, you have four core values. That's voice. How do you help people find their vocation versus their occupation? Leadership, and we define that now as a coaching revolution, that people don't want to be managed, but they do love playing for a great coach. Three, execution. How do you close the gaps between thinking and doing? And four, culture. How do you build a culture that gives birth to the potential of people? And that was really what my talk was about, although it wasn't that defined. And at the end of that talk, Dr. Jubenville said, you got four core values that you're sharing, and then we begin to build a relationship and go from there.
Michael, it occurs to me that a lot of employers these days, both in the public and private sector, are not exactly going out of their way to try to help their employees grow professionally or personally, or even to develop a personal relationship with their employees. Some are just throwing the training manual in their face and saying, here, you have a new job responsibility, deal with it, without giving them the proper training or nurturing that they need in order to make this work both for the individual and for the company. So how do you change that mindset?
Well, and the next thing they do is they give them a book of the month club, and they tell them to read The Good to Great, or they read, you know, the Raving Fans, or they read A One-Minute Manager, and they say, you know, go and emulate what it says in this book. And they drastically discount the ability to take a book, synthesize it, understand it, comprehend it, retain it, internalize it, and then turn around and actually do what it says in the book. And so about 10% of companies out there actually invest in their people to get better. And so we believe that we're in a coaching revolution where you're going to see this huge trend of companies that ask the question of how can we get more out of our people by meeting our people's core needs. And that's where they need a coach. That's where they need a system. That's where they need a plan. And that's where they really need somebody who specializes in activating their potential. And I define that as knowledge, skill, desire, confidence. That's a whole person theory that we operate from. More companies are going to start doing this. They're going to start taking their people and really understanding the human capital and the assets they have and coaching those people.
Isn't it really more cost effective to invest in the people that you have rather than to invest in new personnel who might have a cheaper base salary if you hire them at the entry level, or if they've just come out of college, or if they're relatively inexperienced, and then try to train them up?
Well, I think, barring that you have the right people, we use three assumptions when we work with your company, and that is, A, you have the right people on the team. B, the right people have a genuine desire to get better. And C, the right people have the capacity to get better. Knowledge, skills, desire, confidence. So to your point, yes, I agree that if you get the right people on the team, then it certainly makes sense to coach and develop that talent on your team versus constantly turnover with trying to get new people. But the selection and hiring process is so critical. And Colby really talks a lot about aligning with core values and matching up on what you believe in early on. Because once you get the right people on the bus, so to speak, it's not the end of the story. It's really the beginning of the story.
Yeah, organizations really approach that struggle the same way that individuals do. You know, we simply just accept the current circumstances and act like we really have no control over those circumstances. But companies that truly look different at the opportunity. They want to see it and seize the opportunity, and that's one of the big ideas. So one of the things that Michael and I have seen within companies and in people is that they really want to know three questions. You know, number one, who's in charge? And that's a real simple question. Who's in charge? Number two, what are the rules? And number three, how are you going to hold me accountable? And so what Michael does a great job with, I think, in companies and really has taught me is to answer those questions on the front end and embrace that struggle and get down to the essence of what is really the true business challenge. And that's really what we tackle in the first chapter of the book, in the Concrete Jungle. We call it the jungle for a reason.
It's like a professor having a syllabus that he distributes at the beginning of the semester. Here are the rules of the game, student. If you don't like the rules of the game, you have the option to drop. But sure. Yeah, that's like in a de facto contract between professor and student.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're looking for those. You know, kids today, and I know we're trying to balance this between the book itself and how it really relates to, I think, students today, but kids today really want to know those things. Here's really what students want to know more than anything, and I think this book addresses that, and Michael can probably speak to it as well. But I think when these kids go to bed at night, the one question that they want answered more than anything is what does my future look like? They want to know that. If you ask them, they say they worry about two things, their future and their finances. Well, that's no different than adults. Adults worry about the same thing. They want to know what their future and their finances look like. And I think one of the things that this book does at a micro level is it looks at that personal relationship. It says, hey, if you want to change your future, if you want to change your economic outlook, the last 6 years don't have to look like the next 6 years, and here's how you change it.
We'll be back with more in just one moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The annual Baseball and Literature and Culture Conference at MTSU welcomes scholars from all over the country to present papers on numerous baseball-related topics. Their research highlights the national pastime's impact on everything from race relations to the economy and the sport's depiction in poetry and novels. The conference has attracted all-stars and Hall of Famers, including Denny McClain and Ferguson Jenkins. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with Dr. Colby Jubenville and Michael Burt, authors of Zebras and Cheetahs Look Different and Stay Agile to Survive the Business Jungle. Talk about the principles of sports education and sportsmanship that both of you are familiar with that cross over with the principles you address for businesses in Zebras and Cheetahs.
That's an interesting question. The approach that I've taken to sportsmanship education is really about how states can look differently at sportsmanship and how they can use sportsmanship not as a tool to hold people in place, but a tool to educate people about the way that the game should be played and embrace that. So when we worked with the state of Alabama, we asked them, hey, what's the number one issue that you're facing in the state of Alabama. And they said, you know, the ejections of coaches and athletes in the sport of football. Well, the same idea holds true in the book Zebras and Cheetahs. One of the core principles we talk about in the growth model is a dominant focus. So for the state of Alabama, the dominant focus was the reduction in ejections of players and athletes. And we believe, with the first step in the growth model, that every organization that is truly successful, that wants to really create the change that they seek, first has to say, more than anything, this is what we want to accomplish in the next 18 months, the next 24 months, the next 36 months.
Michael, do you see certain analogies between that of a business coach and a sports coach?
Yeah, I think there's an incredible amount of crossover. I call it the collision between sport and business and sport. And what I have found by being both is the enormous need that business leaders need to have certain things that great athletic coaches have. They need to know what the dominant aspiration is. We talk about this in the book. The single driving thing you would like to manifest in a 12-month cycle is measured in 30-day windows. For coaches, those are called championships. In the business world, it gets more complicated because there's top-line growth, bottom-line growth, number of customer acquisition we need to get. So that's where the complication comes in business. In sports, you play to win a championship. You play to improve the quality of the players. But in business, there's lots of targets. So this concept of a dominant aspiration is the championship. And also, sports coaches could use lots of business savvy. They need to be coaching and developing the whole person. They need to understand how to sell what they've got. They need to understand how to compete on unique value. They need to understand how to be a zebra and a cheetah, how to look different, and how to run faster than their competitors, because when it comes to recruiting, that's really what it's about, is looking different and running faster and being an obvious choice because of the unique value you create.
Yeah, one of the things that we talk about in the book that I think is really powerful is this idea of what does it really look like to be a coach? And we're not talking about the typical corporate coach and corporate coaching. We really bring this athletic background, as both Michael and I have athletic coaching backgrounds. And so we've come up with this concept that coaches, great coaches in your life, if you look back at your coach and you say, hey, this guy or girl was a great coach for me, they did three things. They made you have conversations you didn't want to have. They made you do things you didn't want to do to become something that you didn't think you could become. Well, let's work through that and see what that is. So if you have those conversations and you have that conversation, then that's a realization. And you realize, well, there's a lot of people that go through life that never realize what they're supposed to realize. Then if you go to that next step where they make you do things you don't want to do, that's confrontation. They confront the problem. And that realization and confrontation leads to transformation, which is become something you didn't think you could become. And so when Michael steps in, he says, hey, I'm not here just to listen and try to pull it out of you. He said, I'm here to do, you know, those three things. I'm here to make you realize. I'm here to make you confront. And I'm here to make you transform.
It treats the employee like a player in the game. Can you address that a little bit, Michael?
Yeah, I think when you think about this coaching relationship, think of a coach as a person that finds and fills missing structures. So for a manager that sees himself as a coach, they are there to engage their employee in a set of systematic and consistent behaviors that allows that employee to do something in the future that they cannot do today. And they do that by finding and filling their missing structures. And you say, well, what is a missing structure? At the personal level, it could be they lack knowledge, they lack skill, they lack effort, they lack confidence, they lack connectivity. These are all missing structures, and great coaches bring those structures to the equation, and they transfer these characteristics and attributes to the employee so that over a period of time, the employee can do things in the future that they simply cannot do today because they have a coach. Now, that's much different than a supervisor that just supervises to make sure nobody tears anything up or hurts anybody. The coach brings the knowledge, skill, desire, confidence to the equation, and that's why great coaches come in and turn things around. They get better production. My philosophy is real simple. The better the coach, the better the team. And in 5 years, there will not be a role for managers. The trend will be all the managers will have to think like coaches. They will have to turn into coaches.
Here's an interesting little sidebar on page 139 about turning employees into rock stars. You know, there's a school of thought in the business world that you don't want any of your employees to be thought of as rock stars or to be singled out for their excellent work if their level is so much higher than that of some of your other employees, because it will foster jealousy and discord. Tell me, Colby, is that is the approach that you're talking about different from that? Why shouldn't an employee who has superior performance be singled out as an example?
They should be. They should be. The goal should that everybody should be a rock star within your industry, within your organization. They absolutely should be. If your system of reward creates competition that creates that negative environment, then there's a problem. And here's what I tell you. If you look around the business world today, that's exactly what we've created, is a negative environment where people are pitted to compete against each other. And so one of the things that we talk about in the growth model is that, you know, there's really three things to focus on, which is future opportunity. How can we create that future opportunity? Past performance. What does our past performance look like? And then the market variables. What's going on in the market right now that's going to dictate the kind of performance that we can create individually and collectively? So it's those three things that we look at with each person within the organization, rather than saying everybody's got to hit this number. We say, hey, let's look at the work and let's put you in the best possible position to win, just like a coach does when he has role players within a team.
Michael, do you concur with that? I mean, why would you criticize your quarterback for not being a good punter when that's not his role?
Well, I think role definition is important. That particular concept that you're referring to in the book is we did that with the bank. And we created, in the book, we talk about having a dominant aspiration. That's a tangible outcome you would like to drive. And then you have an emotional pull. You need some reason for the employees to get excited, to have fun, versus just telling them you need to grow this division by 20%. Well, in a bank, the teller could care less about the growth of a bank by 20%. The FSR could care less. The city president cares. But other people don't care. They're on a salary. They get a paycheck. So we had to find a way to make it fun and engaging. And so we created the concept of rock star management. So when you produce like a rock star, you get treated like a rock star. So it created a friendly, cooperative system that the people really, really loved in the bank, and it produced some massive results, 43% increase in retail sales that particular year, and that was in 2009, in the worst banking economy we've seen. So that was just a theme that got people excited and engaged.
We'll take one more brief pause. We'll be back with more on MTSU on the Record right after this.
MTSU's Jewish and Holocaust Studies minor offers undergraduate students a chance to study the culture and religion of the Jewish people and the Holocaust in an interdisciplinary program. Studies include history and culture, theology and philosophy, and the arts and social sciences. Courses tackle vital topics central to local and global awareness, including multiculturalism and the meanings of diversity, religious tolerance, and genocide. For the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking with the authors of Zebras and Cheetahs, Look Different and Stay Agile to Survive the Business Jungle, Michael J. Burt and Dr. Colby B. Jubenville of MTSU's Department of Health and Human Performance. Talk to me a little bit, Colby, about how business communication should work from the bottom up.
Yeah.
We know how it works from the top down. The boss tells you to do something and you do it. What sort of avenues do you propose for employees to be able to communicate their suggestions and concerns
Sure.
from the bottom up the ladder?
The issue is, how do you build individual and collective power? And that's the real issue. How do we create individually and collectively what we all want to create? And I think at the lowest level, it's incentivizing. You've got to incentivize in a systematic way. That's number one. So that's the lowest level. The second level is structured time, high-value activities. One of the things Michael talks about with people that he works with is, do you know the highest value of your time? And most of the time, people cannot answer this question. Why can't they answer this question? Because they don't know what the dominant focus is. If you don't know what the dominant focus is, you cannot understand what the highest value of your time is. The next level up from that, in terms of employee all the way up to management, is to buy in. You got to have people buy into the dominant focus. Well, how do they buy into the dominant focus? Well, Michael just said it, through emotion, through engagement. And then from there, you create that total engagement, and that whole concept from bottom up takes complicated growth and makes it really simple.
How do you get supervisors who don't buy in to your approach to overcome their own fears within themselves and to embrace what you're talking about, because what you're talking about involves, assuming you have the right people on your team to begin with, a certain level of trust in the employee, in the workforce. Michael?
Well, I think that's a very valid question. Not everybody who's a manager wants to wake up and become a coach. Not everybody's interested in personal growth, personal development. So what we do as a leadership coach, as an entrepreneurial coach, what I do first is try to get buy-in to me. And I'm going through this very thing with a large company called Asurion. We have a program called Turn Your Managers into Coaches. And the first two opportunities with them is just really to get them to buy into me, the coach. And once they buy into me, the messenger, then they begin to open up to the message. So it's not something you can force feed onto people. What we're looking for are enlightened people who want to play at another level, who see the value of having a guide or coach in the process. Not everybody will fit in that. The book Zebras and Cheetahs is not for every person. It's really for people who are interested in two things. How do I look different than my competitors and run faster? And how do I take complicated business growth and make it simple and easy and engaging? And so I think there's a very target market for people who are interested in that concept. But I don't think it's for everybody. I don't think you'll see this shift from every manager in the country. There still are supervisors. I think it's an old, outdated methodology. When we were in kindergarten, our kindergarten teachers went out and would watch us play on the playground and would supervise us, and they would make sure nobody got hurt and nobody hurt themselves. Well, that's almost what some managers are doing in the workplace. Nobody hurt anybody else. Nobody hurt the company. But there's no coaching. There's no growth. There's no improvement. There's no passion. And that person has to be sold on this concept.
This book really is about setting the pace, and it's the pace of the life in the concrete jungle. And that life, as you know, Michael will tell you, he's the first to tell you, it can lead to two things, fatigue and blind spots. There is a time, I can tell you, when Michael and I looked at each other and said, you know, I'm tired of doing this, we're tired of doing this together. There was a time when we were ready to take this book, and I think both of us were ready to take and throw at each other. But what I love about this book is it really encapsulates a time in both of our lives where we said, hey, we're making a gut-level decision to go. We're drawing a line of sand. We're going to do this, and this is what it's going to look like. And so for those people that are out there right now that say, man, I feel the fatigue, I feel the blind spots, what I really believe is that this book, if you embrace it in the right way and you're open, you're humble to it, it can really help you change the way you see what you do.
In addition to institutional inertia, one of the biggest problems plaguing any business right now is uncertainty, the volatility of the economy. How does your book help both the coaches and the employees address that?
Michael, I'll let you take that first if you want.
I think it sums up the premise of the whole book. Business growth in today's market is incredibly complicated. And we take complicated growth, and through the organizing metaphor of a concrete jungle, we make it simple and easy and engaging. And this model is a 10-step model that has grown organizations by 30 to 40% in a one-year cycle. And I think the only constant in life is change. And what you need is a timeless, principle-centered model that will work across multiple disciplines. We've taken this into banking, financial services, real estate, insurance. I've even taken it into the prison rehabilitation system in Tennessee. And this model will work because it's based on principles and organization. I bet there's less than 10% of companies out there that actually have a growth model that they're executing, and most people have no idea what the execution plans are to actually do it. So basically, we've written a game plan to go out there and grow your enterprise. Tricor is a government entity that is in charge of prison rehabilitation. They have a dominant focus is to get people out of prison and keep them out of prison. And so over the past 2 years, I worked with their managers to turn their managers into coaches by using this systematic model. And the reality is, every college student that comes out of Middle Tennessee State University, in essence, needs to look different and run faster than the competitors. In a global marketplace, these kids, or these, in that case, those offenders that come out of prison, the kids that come out of college, the students that come out of college, will be competing versus 100, 200, sometimes 300 other people for one single job. And if they don't know what their unique differential advantage is, they don't know what makes them look different than other people, they will be commoditized, and they will get passed over for highly competitive jobs because they don't have a distinct different, an advantage. Like a zebra looks different and a cheetah runs faster. And so one of the biggest things I think you got to teach everybody is, what is your unique ability? What's your unique capacity? What's your genius level that you've been given? And how can you capitalize on that?
I'll never forget when Michael called me after one of his presentations within the prison system. He said that a guy stood up and said this one powerful quote, and made me think about everyone in a nonprofit. He said, "I've done so much with so little for so long that I'm now qualified to do anything with nothing." Now tell me that doesn't sound like somebody in higher education, somebody that's sitting there on the football field about to coach a practice at a public school in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. That's all of us. That's all of us. And so those are the kind of powerful ideas that you see within this book that really get people to go, hey, here it is. Let's go do it.
We'll have one more short pause, but we'll be right back with MTSU on the Record.
The Army ROTC College Program at MTSU prepares students mentally, physically, and emotionally to become leaders and promotes virtues of duty, honor, country. ROTC cadets are involved in all academic disciplines, athletics, and student organizations at MTSU. Full scholarships and tuition assistance are awarded based on merit. All cadets upon graduation will serve their country as second lieutenants either in the Army, Army Reserve, or Army National Guard. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We are talking about zebras and cheetahs, look different and stay agile to survive, The Business Jungle by Michael J. Burt and Dr. Colby B. Jubenville, who have been our guests today on MTSU on the Record. The book is published by Wiley. You can get it at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places in both brick-and-mortar land and cyberspace as well. But I'd like to close by talking with Colby about his academic journal and the alterations that it has been going through lately.
Yeah, I think one of the ways that you really know you've done something great is if it lives on long after you're gone. And when we built that journal, Dr. Ben Goss and I did, and Ben's my good friend all the way back from my days at Southern Miss and at Missouri State, now at Stetson University, we dreamed this thing up probably about 5 years ago, and it was simple. The reason why was because we continued to get rejected in publishing in other journals, and they couldn't give us good reason. And so finally, we got the confidence to say, you know what, you're wrong, and here's why you're wrong.
The idea is that academics and sports practitioners in the quote-unquote real world would both have a place where they could have their say for the betterment of sports enterprises.
And I think the one thing that makes it different other than any other journal out there is we have a white paper that is reviewed by the practitioner team, and the goal is for the executive team to walk in and lay that white paper down and say, hey, this is how we can implement this plan in the next 60, 90 days, which is critical. So there's two really exciting things that happened, really three. Number one, it was acquired by Sagamore, which is a national publisher, which is huge. When I started this, that's what I wanted to happen, so that's exciting.
And the title has changed.
Yes, we've rebranded and repositioned as the Journal of Applied Sport Management, which to me really captures the essence of the vision, and I'm so happy that that's the place. That's where it ended up. And then the third is that it's connected to the Southern Sport Management Association. So, you know, one of the keys, I think, to greatness is serving many. And I think with this journal, we're going to serve as many people as possible and continue to attract the right people. And hopefully we can have the same success with the book as well. And I'm excited about both.
Michael, Colby, thanks for being our guest today on MTSU on the Record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
MTSU on the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.